ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So we have entered into the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. We have already covered two sections in the first chapter and including this present third section, are all supposed to be upasanas. First, it is a contemplation on horse, taking a horse as just a support. We have to consider it not as a horse, but as the universal Lord. In fact, in South India, there are some people whose Ishtadevata is Hayagriva. The whole body will be like a horse. Only the face will be just like that of the horse. But he is the universal divine Lord. So contemplation on an Ashva. In fact, it should not be astonishing if we believe in the essential teachings of the Vedanta. Everything is nothing but Brahman. There is nothing else excepting Brahman. But because we have put the collyrium of ignorance on our eyes, we are saying, I am an individual and everything is separate from me. But the fact is, everything is nothing but pure light. For that, we also give the example of a cinema screen. A film is being watched. Every object that we see on that white screen, is compared to Brahman, and on that light falls, and that light is nothing but transforms itself as if, because of the filming, into the living, non-living, everything. So in this analogy, the background is that pure Brahman. But our mind becomes like a mirror and our thoughts become like the film running and the light in the pure mind is taking various shapes, nama, rupa, names and forms, which we call thoughts. And if the thoughts are believed to be outside, they are called objects. But if the thoughts, then they are called within us as thoughts. Everything is nothing but Brahman. So, we can take, what is the point? We can take any object. In fact, Hindus are experts in it. They take a small piece of stone and project upon it or superimpose upon it the qualities of the Divine Lord. So, Pratima, we have discussed about it earlier in the Taittiriya as an introduction to the Taittiriya Upanishad. There are various upasanas. And the crudest of them, they are called Pratima Upasana. Just like a human being, we fashion, like Durga Puja time, Kali Puja time, Krishna Puja time, Ganesha Puja time. Then Pratika. Pratika is a symbol, a cross, a small stone, as representative of Lord Shiva or Lord Vishnu, etc. Christians take the cross as the very embodiment of Jesus Christ. So every religion has evolved these means. Then among these contemplations, there is one contemplation which is the highest contemplation. It is called Aham Graha Upasana. When Sri Ramakrishna meditated upon Hanuman, he made Hanuman, I am the Hanuman, Aham Graha. What I was meditating upon is none other than me. And that Ahangraha Upasana is considered as the highest type of contemplation. Anyway, we have entered into this third section. So, first section, we have taken the horse, and that too not any horse, but a superior breed, and which is done only by powerful kings, very expensive, and as I mentioned, at the end of its wandering, everybody is conquered by the king who is doing this Ashwamedha Yagna, and the horse itself, when it returns, protected by the soul powerful armies of the king, then he becomes the emperor, the king of kings. Then only he can perform. Then it is a huge ritual, time, money and effort are very necessary. But the Upanishad is very loving, kind, says, what about others? Any king, king of the kings who performs this Ashwamedha Yagna, he contemplates this Ashwam horse as Virat. As a result, he becomes Virat. Virat, as I explained yesterday, is another name for Saguna Brahma. But anybody else, mentally they can do. We can do mental puja. In every ordinary puja, there is the third part called Manasika Puja. And there, we must have that buddhi, that intelligence, to bring the best things. Because thoughts do not require any expenditure. So the best flowers have to be imagined, the best perfumes, the best beauty, the best taste, the best climate, everything can be imagined. And for that also, out of its infinite compassion, the scripture gives us certain helps. You imagine your heart as a lotus, etc., etc. So, the first one is contemplation on the horse as Saguna Brahma. The second is contemplation of Agni as Saguna Brahma. In that respect, our Shankaracharya writes several bhashyams, enlightening our intellects to the extent that is possible by a human being. So in the Agni Upasana, Srishti, so in the beginning there was nothing. That is, before the creation, there was only Brahman. Then that Brahman somehow became creation himself, and he was called Saguna Brahma. And that Saguna Brahma is manifesting as me, as you, as every object, as the living object, as the non-living object. Everything is nothing but Saguna Brahma. Why do we call it Saguna Brahma? Because we are able to experience it either through our five sense organs or imagine through the mind. That is, within the scope of time, space and causation. And whatever is imagined through these limitations is called Saguna Brahma. When there is no limitation, that is called Nirguna Brahma. The goal is slowly raising the mind, purifying it more and enlarging its identity with more and more, until finally we identify first with the entire universe and later on with that pure, indescribable Paramatma. So, we have seen Shankaracharya's Bhashyam. In the second section, Srishti, that is to say, there is God in simple words. But Vedanta doesn't use the word God. It uses the word that which is nothing. Nothing was there. But immediately it qualifies, lest some people may mistake. From nothing, nothing can be created. From something only, something can be created. What is creation? Seeing the cause with names and forms is called creation. So, everything is Brahman exists, but it gives a peculiar name, Mrityu. Mrityu means Saguna Brahma. And yes, we have seen that is called Ghatabhashya. How Shankaracharya takes the simple example of a pot made out of clay, and how clay is the ultimate cause of the entire creation of pots, small pot, big pot, blue pot, red pot, square pot, rounded pot, angular pot, etc., etc. That is to make us understand through this example the whole universe consisting of both the living and non-living is nothing but manifestation. How can a non-living creature be manifestation of consciousness? Not that it is devoid of consciousness, but with our limited sense organs plus mind, we are not able to perceive. Of the three qualities, we perceive, we experience only one characteristic, that is called existence, Sat. But everything is Sat is nothing but Chit and Ananda. Chit and Ananda are there. We are not able to perceive, not because they are absent, but because our instrument is not adequate to see, to experience. So that is called Ghatabhashyam, very enlightening. That means God exists, not in the sense that we limit him as good or evil. When I am happy, he is a good God. I give him certificate. When I am not happy, he is the most wretched person in the whole world. Again, it is my certificate based upon my experience. No, whatever God does is absolutely for the good of every person. So God wants us to run to him and become one with him. And if we are resisting it, he will have to pull us. That pulling towards him is what we call our miseries, our difficulties, our problems in life. But if we are wise and look back and say, if I have come a bit nearer to God, it is only because of these problems. Without problem, there can be no progress in life. Without a need, there cannot be creativity. The mother of every creativity, every action of creativity is necessity. So that is what we have seen, and we have entered into the Pranopasana. I have given the gist of it, even though some points, beautiful points are there. And prana is here highly praised. Now, there is a peculiar thing. This is actually how we can understand Vedas or different schools of philosophy. But in the beginning, I just quoted the very first mantra, that Prajapati or Saguna Brahma, he manifested himself as two of his children. One is called God, another is called demon. And God is one with all desirable spiritual qualities. And just the diametrically opposite thing is called Asura. Naturally, in our experience, we see the demons, many, many, many more than good people. We can count on our fingers who is a good person. But very difficult, there is no problem in counting demons. Most of the people are demons only, there is no doubt about it. Now there is always a continuous fight between these two. And this is an allegory. Bhagavad Gita is an allegory. The fight between Kauravas and Pandavas is fight between the evil and the good. And this is the theme that recurs infinite number of times in the Puranas, mythologies, in the Upanishads, in the teachings of everybody. So what is life? Life is the attempt to manifest one's own divinity when there is a force which is trying to press it down. Life is a manifestation of one's own true nature when some other evil force, which is called Maya or avidya or ignorance, is trying to press it down. This was one of the famous definitions of life given by Swami Vivekananda to Khetri Maharaja. Swamiji also, just I am reminding you, has given three other definitions. Life is a school. Life is a gymnasium. Life is a circus. By school, Swami Vivekananda meant we are here to learn the lessons. Lesson, actually. Only one lesson, that I am Brahman. That is the only lesson we have to learn. But in order to really have that knowledge, we have to develop our physical, intellectual, aesthetical, moral, and spiritual muscles. That is what Swamiji meant. Life is a gymnasium. Every action of ours will prove to one's own self that how much nearer I am approaching to God. But when once I understand who I am, I become free from all trammels, and then life becomes a continuous swimming in the ocean of bliss. And that is what Swamiji said, life is a circus. A Jivan Mukta goes on witnessing everything, but it is nothing but a big circus. In the circus, there are serious people, there are also buffoons, there are also jokers, and all sorts of people are there, and they are there. Everyone has a role to make the Leela, the divine sport, complete. Sri Ramakrishna expresses this many times in the gospel. Jatila kutila are necessary to complete the drama, the Leela, divine Leela. Make it most enchanting. So, the first mantra tells us there were two classes of Prajapati sons, the gods, that is the spiritual people, and the demons, that is worldly people, whom Kathopanishad beautifully, those who seek prayas and those who seek srayas, those who seek God and those who seek the world. Naturally, the gods were few and the demons many, which means most of the time the gods get beaten, black and blue. So these two struggle with one another for mastery of these worlds. This is the symbolism. Life is a fight between the good and evil until inch by inch we conquer the opposite and go to our real place, Manachalo Nijaniketane. So then, there was an occasion, and being overwhelmed by the demons, the gods consulted with each other, and they came to the conclusion, let us surrender ourselves to God, let us praise God, that is called Udgita, so we can overcome by the grace of God, but we have to sing. And in that connection, context, a small story has been given. So this third section, which is called Prana Upasana, and the praises of Prana, glories of Prana, consisting of Prana Upasana, has 28 verses. As I said, I am not going through the verses, but I will give you the real gist of every section, and I also highlighted with some of the important commentaries written by our great Paramaguru Shankaracharya, which are very enlightening to every one of us. Not only to me, but to all of you. Because you are all very intelligent people. God is manifesting in you in the form of intelligence. So you should use it to understand God better and better. So the fight I have already described, that one by one, the sense organs, they felt very egotistic. I am sustaining the whole life. So the eye left. Nothing happened. A bit inconvenient. After 1 year it returned. So it was shocked. It admitted defeat. That I thought without me, you will not be able to survive. Now I am humbled. Life is a bit defective without me. But it did not vanish. So, the other four organs also, that is the nostrils and the ears, it's a taste and touch, all of them took leave for 1 year. And when they came back, life went on joyfully. So this is a great lesson we have to learn. Don't think blind people, deaf people, or people, they are not happy people. Yes, life will go on. Happiness has nothing to do with the body. It has something to do with the mind. And mind is full of thoughts. And if the thoughts are positive, that is what many Christian preachers, they wanted the power of positive thinking. And that's what Sri Ramakrishna also preaches. Only he calls it spirituality. Swamiji preached the same. And mother said that don't ever forget under whatever circumstance that you have a mother and be proud. I also have a mother. Sri Ramakrishna illustrates it beautifully, saying that even the maidservant's son, when he is being beaten, says, I have a mother. My mother will protect me. I am going to tell about you to my mother. The child has complete confidence in the mother. Mother is going to save me, rescue me. We have to become children of the mother. That's why two commandments of the Holy Mother I have spoken about many times, and I am also going to speak about many more times throughout my talks, as long as I talk. The first commandment is, never forget you have a mother and I am your mother. Second commandment is even more important than the first commandment. Never forget you are my child. Therefore, you lead your life as my child. People looking at your life should not say fie upon you. Because if you are leading, if you truly believe that I am your mother and you will not bring bad name to me. In fact, you will glorify my name, not by talking about it, but by living the life. So that is what Holy Mother's commandment. Never forget you are my child and live in accordance to that knowledge. So these organs, they have become selfish. So that's why the whole of humanity can be divided into the selfish and the unselfish. So every organ started thinking that I am doing it for my pleasure. And for my pleasure, I also have to give some service. So even though the eye is able to see, for example, that seeing helps all of us, but it is enjoying beautiful sights selfishly for its own purpose. It doesn't share it either with the ear or the nostril, or the tongue, or the skin. Every organ became completely selfish. A bit unselfish, but mostly selfish. So, the life can go on merrily. It is not the important. It is not supporting the entire life. Then, the turn of the prana came. Prana is the most unselfish manifestation, because prana is working 24 hours in the form of 5 activities. Prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. We are, anybody who is alive, it is because of the prana. And prana is not getting anything. It only helps each one of us to get individual experiences. It is because of the prana I am able to see, to hear, to smell, to taste, to touch. Without prana, life is not possible. So when the prana is about to depart, the whole personality felt as if a huge tree, well grown, well established, deep with its roots, is about to be totally uprooted. Sometimes you have seen some machines, they want to transplant one tree from one place and put it somewhere else. So they dig around to some depth, and then these machines sink deep and lift the whole earth, and the huge tree is put in a huge truck and it is taken to the new place, and they have already kept it ready by digging and they put, it just takes but a few days for the tree to completely recover, but the old mud, etc., is still clinging to it. Therefore, it is never dead. It is as if a person had changed his home from one place to another place. So when prana is about to depart, then the whole body, mind became agitated. And then they understood, without prana, it is not possible for us to survive. So it is the most important organ. And whoever protects us is called a devata or god. Therefore, prana is the most important manifestation of God. And that is why we are called pranis. Prani means endowed with life. Otherwise, we will be dead people. So the entire section is, this third section is devoted to the praises of the gods. And in this connection, Shankaracharya writes beautiful commentary on the very understanding of what is called Hinduism. And in that Hinduism, what is called Veda Pramana. I will try my best to summarize these concepts. Perhaps I may not be able to finish it in today's class, but it's very important for us to understand. Just as a background, I will give you something. When Swami Vivekananda had talked about Hinduism at the Chicago Parliament of Religions, he mentioned a very important point, because there are so many religions and every religion has got an authoritative book, and that is what we call a Veda. So Bible is the Veda for the Christians, and the Quran is the Veda for the Muslims. Guru Granth Sahib is the Veda for Sikhs. So the three Pitakas are the Vedas for the Buddhists. So etc., etc. These are all, we accept all these books as Vedas. Now, what do we mean by Veda? You take, for example, any Veda, there are stories. For example, in this very Brihadaranyaka, you get so many small, small stories are there. Are they to be considered? God has infinite time. So to pass his time, he went on narrating so many stories. If you take the Bible, what Swami Prabhavanandaji beautifully says, he begat. So David begat somebody, that somebody begat somebody else, that somebody else begat somebody else. Page after page, the Bible is filled with this description of the lineage. Is that also part of the Veda? So Swami Vivekananda, in his talk on Hinduism, he summarizes and says a few things we have to understand. That is what Shankaracharya wants to prove here, which we will come a little later. Swami Vivekananda says that whatever knowledge we can get through our five sense organs, that is not Veda. If the Veda says, you know, I am telling you something wonderful, marvelous. The sun is going rising in the east and the sun is going to set in the west. Vedas would never tell that. And even if they tell, it should not be considered as a Veda. Why? Because there are two proofs of which I will come a little bit later on. Veda means knowledge. What knowledge? Super sensuous knowledge. What does it mean? Whatever facts, whatever knowledge we can never get through our five sense organs, and we are not going to get it till the end of the creation, that which gives us that super sensory knowledge. For example, whether there is somebody Mula Karana called Brahman or God, whether there are higher worlds, whether we had past lives and future lives, whether after death one is going to reap the results of one's own action. Because to reap the actions, one cannot do that in one life. So many religions don't believe either in the past life or future life. All the Judaic, Abrahamic, Semitic religions, they do not believe in it. But Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, they all believe in rebirths. What is a rebirth? A chance, another chance for us to become better ourselves and slowly to approach God. And God will give any number of such opportunities. Every new day is a new birth. After death of this body also, every new rebirth is a grand opportunity to pick up from where we have left off and to proceed further. This is, in very limited sense, called by Charles Darwin as evolution. But Hinduism says, not only there is a biological evolution, there is a geological evolution, there is a mathematical evolution, there is an intellectual evolution, there is a spiritual evolution also, all taking place at different paces, in different people. One life is not enough, and therefore, one life cannot give what we really require. This is the Hindu belief. Hindu means Hindu, a Buddhist, a Sikh, and a Jaina. They all believe in this. But there are so many people who do not believe. That is what we are going to discuss. So that knowledge, which our ordinary five sense organs, however intelligent a person is, however number of finest instruments one may create, one has created, one is going to create, even the AI cannot give us the knowledge about God. Therefore, the conclusion, we have to be crystal clear about it. God can neither be proved nor can be disproved by science. I am repeating, the existence of God can neither be proved nor disproved by science, because that is not the subject. For that we have to take the experience of people who have actually experienced. And how did they experience? By going beyond the sense organs, by going beyond the mind. And how do we know that what they are telling is true? Because I discussed this subject many times. Anybody can say, I have seen God. Anybody can say, I had wonderful visions and I know I am very near to God. There are enough number of fools who can make such a claim, and there are more than enough number of fools who do believe it also. So what is the criteria? Because, you know, every experience transforms our life. This is a scientific fact. So you have seen a most beautiful thing. You heard a most marvelous singing or instrument. You have tasted a very pleasant sweet, and you have smelled the most marvelous smell, and you have touched something which is indescribable. Most of these things are indescribable. For example, when Sri Ramakrishna was walking at the age of 7 or 8 in that vast green fields at the beginning of the rainy season, the whole sky was clouded with thick black clouds, and against that background, a number of swans, pure white, a flock of swans was flying across. Seeing that sight, immediately he fell down unconscious. I am sure thousands and thousands of people must have witnessed the same scene, but for them, just some birds flying across. But for Sri Ramakrishna, it is the nearest, closest experience of experiencing God in the form of Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, truth, beauty, and goodness. So, what are we discussing? There are some people who have experienced these super sensuous truths. But some people claim, how do we know? How do we know? Because there are four characteristics. First characteristic is a person who had experienced God. and experiencing God is not like my seeing you and you are seeing somebody else, or you are seeing some object. No. Experiencing God means realization of God. Realization of God means to know forever without the least bit of shred of doubt, I am God. Aham Brahmasmi. That is the final experience. But this is the highest experience. One can have visions of gods and goddesses. And if they are true visions of gods and goddesses, we have to consider two points. First, a vision of God or God with what is called small g, not capital G, gods and goddesses, cannot be had, first point, without their grace. Any amount of what is called whatever you offer is not sufficient for their grace. Out of infinite love, they appear to some people. That is the first point. Second point, once a person has a genuine experience of a god or a goddess, that person's life, will their character, will be changed forever by the grace of God. So, the first characteristic is, the person becomes continuously joyful, whatever be the circumstances outside. That is the first sign. Secondly, he becomes totally unselfish, because to see a god or goddess is to feel that the whole universe is nothing but manifestation of God. So he becomes unselfish. Third characteristic, they love without any stint. They don't love. A mother loves a baby or children because they are my children. But in this person's case, it's completely unselfish love. So it just flows like the wind blows without stop. So completely unselfish love. Fourth is, there is nothing they cannot sacrifice as a result of that love. They can give up their very, very lives. I will tell you a small story and I will be talking only like this. So once there was a fight between gods and demons. As usual, the demons were about to overcome the gods, and the king of the gods was Indra, and he understood. That's why he was a king. Very intelligent. I cannot defeat because I do not have sufficient weapons. Then somebody advised him that there was a great rishi. He was a Brahmagnani. You approach him and ask him, you give up your life. Out of your backbone, I will make a marvelous, irresistible weapon. And his name was Dadhichi. So Indra approached him, because even these people, they are not spiritual people, but they only obtained their positions because of doing some good actions. They may not be spiritual people, but they are good people. They had faith in God. They performed rituals many times. As a result, they acquired merit. As a result, they went to higher lokas, as we have seen in the Taittiriya. And one of them's merit was so great, he became the leader of all the gods called, he is called Indra. Indra means, it is a title, like prime minister, like president. So immediately Indra, he took his vehicle, Airavata, a huge elephant, which can travel at the speed of mind. And he came to Dadhichi, fell flat, and as a beggar, said, Maharshi, this is our condition. We have been advised, if you can give up your body, then your body is so powerful. Out of the backbone of your physical body, I can fashion one weapon, and nobody can resist that weapon. Immediately, you know what happened? Dadhichi was so glad, at least this physical body. Anyway, I am old, and it is going to fall of itself very soon. But that this could be put in the service of gods, that is the greatest joy, and willingly he entered into yoga and offered. Pavahari Baba, just to remind you, used to perform homas and he entered willingly. He did everything, poured a lot of ghee, and he went and sat down in the midst of the fire, and he was consumed by that fire and by the burning smell of the human body. People, those who are living at some distance, they came to know he offered himself. That is called Swayam Ahuti. He offered himself. Yogis can do that. And it is not a sinful thing on their behalf. So Dadichi has given up. Then out of his backbone, somebody fashioned. And that is called a most powerful weapon called Vajrayudha. And with that, he was able to defeat the god, the demons. So this is a story that goes that four characteristics of a person who had experienced God. But to some extent, the same thing can be also predicted of people who have visions of gods like Saraswati, like Mahalakshmi, like Narayana, like Shiva, etc. They can obtain extraordinary boons, but the most important thing is their whole character will be totally changed. So what is it? These people who have experienced God, they are ever happy. They become most unselfish. Their love is unlimited and equal to everybody. And they are ready to sacrifice anything for the sake of anybody. They don't expect anything, whether you deserve it or not. They are ready to give. And to the extent a person progresses in spiritual life, he also develops these four qualities. That is why Shankaracharya's commentary at the end of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita on the subject called the characteristics of a realized soul, Samadhiman Purusha Sthita Prajna, are beautifully commented upon. And at the end Shankara says, what comes so very naturally to a realized soul must be assiduously acquired by aspiring spiritual seekers. And you apply these four, whether to Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swami Vivekananda, direct disciples, Jesus Christ, Buddha, or great saints, every religion is still alive today. Or not because of the mullahs or priests, pujaris, but because of the saints. So, that is most important. So, what is the subject which we will have to discuss in our next class? That how do we know that Veda is really true? And in that context only, I am just reminding you, Swami Vivekananda said, that knowledge which we can never obtain through our five sense organs, with all the available or would be available in future instruments, that is called Veda. And only those portions of the Vedas which give us that knowledge, that alone is to be considered as Veda. If in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Vedas, you see so many stories, they are called Arthavadas, of which we will talk in our next class. They are just to motivate us, to make us enthusiastic and hopeful. But they have nothing to do with real supersensory knowledge. So there are so many schools of philosophy before the present time. And at present, they are all called Vedanta. But Vedanta doesn't mean only Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta, dualistic philosophy. Qualified non-dualistic philosophy called Vishishta Advaita and non-dualistic philosophy called Advaita, they are gradually ascending levels of experience or progress, we can see. And finally, it is the conclusion is to know that I am Brahman and remain as with that knowledge, unbroken knowledge, that is called the final ascent to the highest realization. Beautiful concepts are given. We are very thankful to Bhagavan Shankaracharya we will talk about Veda Pramana. That means whether the Bible is really an authority. Is it coming from God? If it is coming from God, which part is coming from God and which part is inserted by human beings for the glorification or selfish purposes? That is what is called interpolation, and the consequences of which are beyond anybody's imagination. Rivers of blood have flown by the human interruption. So we will talk about these subjects in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohoho. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.